frequent to a journalist in Bangkok who asked me, why is it that Buddhism focuses so much on suffering? He said, I don't have any suffering in my life. So I asked him if he had any stress in his life. He said, oh yeah, lots and lots of stress. And he proceeded to tell me all the different things that were stressing him out. So regardless of what you call it, suffering or stress, if you're not an arahant, you're suffering from it. And then it's good to recognize that everybody is suffering in the same way. There are differences in the particulars. But deep down inside, everybody has that same sense of being burdened, being overcome, being pushed in ways they'd rather not be pushed, weighed down in ways they'd rather not be weighed down. As the Buddha said, when you face dukkha, suffering or stress, you have two reactions. One is a sense of bewilderment. Why is this happening to me? And the second is a search. Is there someone who knows a way out from this suffering or stress? And the Buddha took that sense of bewilderment very seriously. The other teachings that were being given at his time that he criticized the most are the ones he said leave people bewildered. Teachings that would say there's nothing you can do because you have no power of action. It's all illusory. So that leaves you unprotected, leaves you bewildered. Or if your life is totally dependent on the decisions of some Creator God, that leaves you unprotected and bewildered. Or if everything is random, there is no pattern to why you suffer. So no matter how hard you try to figure it out, you can't figure it out. That leaves you bewildered and unprotected. So he offered his teachings as a way of offering both a way of overcoming bewilderment and of finding protection, i.e. protection from the suffering. And one of the first things he has you do is try to take the personal sting out of your suffering. And this is very hard for people to do. We're obsessed with the particulars of our suffering. They're the things that demand attention. And notice people can go over and over and over again the particulars of why their suffering is special. So it's important that you look into why you may have that feeling, what sort of special attention you want to demand, you feel that you deserve. I've run into some people who develop that feeling of deserving special attention so that when they're not given that special attention, there's a sense of martyrdom. And there's a certain enjoyment in martyrdom. But it still leaves you unprotected. It's still not a solution for suffering. So you don't want to focus on the particulars, you want to focus on the details, but it's a different kind of detail. It's the universal details. This is one of the reasons why the Buddha has us develop the Brahma-viharas. Realizing that everybody is suffering, and it would be better if we could all find a way to true happiness. Feeling compassion for all those who are suffering, and feeling empathetic joy for those who are not. In other words, if you see someone's better off than you are, you don't give in to feelings of jealousy or resentment. You don't want to pull them down to your level or what you perceive as your level. Because if you really look carefully in people's hearts, you find that even people who look happy on the outside still have their suffering. That may seem minor to you, but it's still suffering. That helps to realize we're all looking for happiness, and many of us have found at least a measure of happiness, but it's not secure. And so there's no need for jealousy for people who are in what seems to be a fortunate but very insecure place. You're happy for them, but you also have compassion. And then there's equanimity, realizing there's an awful lot that your choices cannot change. And there's people you would like to see happier than they are, but they're not. Things you can't change in one way or another in your own life. And you realize that other people have the same problem. There are things in their lives that they would like to change, but they can't. This is how equanimity gives rise to a sense of samvega. The realization that we're all suffering in one way or another, and there are a lot of ways that we can't do anything about. Unless we practice. So as you think of all the suffering in the world, it's not meant to get you depressed. It's meant for you to think about, how can I find a way out? If I can find the way out, how can I share it with others? So that instead of looking them for a cure for your suffering, leading to your happiness, you want to find what you can within. And having looked at all the sufferings of other beings, and developing a sense of goodwill for all beings, it brings you back to the particulars of your suffering from a different perspective. So instead of looking at what makes your suffering different, you want to look at it in terms of what makes it in common with everyone else. What does it share with everyone else? This is where the Buddha's summary of what suffering is becomes really important. It's the five clinging aggregates: clinging to form, clinging to feeling, clinging to perceptions, clinging to fabrications, clinging to consciousness, at the senses. It sounds pretty abstract. And you wonder where the Buddha got this particular way of dividing up the pie of your experience. Seems to come from the practice of concentration. Because when you try to get the mind to settle down, here in the present moment, the first thing you come into contact with, of course, is the body. You've got the breath coming in, going out. That's form. And you're going to encounter feelings. There'll be feelings of pleasure, feelings of pain, neither pleasure nor pain. Then you want to learn how to deal with those feelings in such a way that allows you to settle down. This is where perception comes in. You perceive the breath not only as the air coming in and out of the lungs, but also as the energy that suffuses the body. And you start thinking about how that energy could be adjusted, how it could be made more comfortable, so that you have a better place to settle down. That's fabrication. Thinking about the breath and then evaluating the breath. Then there's the consciousness of all these things. So those are the components of concentration practice. And you find that as you try to bring the mind into oneness with its object, you have to learn how to isolate these particular functions of the mind, your aspects of your experience, how you adjust the form, i.e. the breath. Well, that requires fabrication. It also requires perception, because some perceptions get in the way of even imagining that breath energy could go down the back, go out the legs, or that it could have an effect on any pains you might feel in the body, any sense of blockage in the body. If you perceive the breath simply as air coming in and out of the lungs, it's totally irrelevant, say, to a sense of blockage in your knee. But if you perceive it as this energy flowing through the nerves and through the blood vessels, then the question is, why is there a blockage there? How can you get around it? How can you dissolve it away? So you find that you have to isolate your perceptions and then adjust them. You learn how to isolate your feelings. In other words, there may be pain in different parts of the body, but is there pain everywhere in the body? No. There's some parts of the body that feel okay. And because they're simply okay, they may not demand a lot of attention, but if you learn how to give them attention, give them a space to grow, to develop, this sense of okayness becomes more than just okay. It becomes that positively pleasant. There's a sense of fullness and refreshment that can come. When you give these areas of well-being in the body some space and give them a chance to grow, when you hover around them, protect them. So as you're getting the mind to settle down, these are the mental functions that you have to pay attention to: feeling, perception, fabrication. And you gain a different sense of your consciousness. It doesn't have to be just in one spot or focused outside. You can suffuse the whole body with your awareness, so you're aware of the whole body all at once continually. And this allows the mind to settle down so that you can drop the evaluation eventually, because it feels really good. And you can actually become one with the breath. And there's still a sense of ease and a sense of fullness. Sometimes the fullness, though, gets to be too much. And this is where perception comes in handy. You can perceive a more subtle level of breath energy. That's not so active, that's not so burdensome. It's the sense of rapture can get really strong. In the beginning, it's really nice to have that sense of refreshment and fullness. But after a while, you can get tiresome. So you can use your perception of a more subtle breath energy to tune in to a different level. Or there's simply ease in the body. And then you allow your sense of perception to let the breath stop as you hold in mind the idea that there is an oxygen exchange at the pores of your skin. And if the mind is really, really still, it means the brain is using less oxygen so that the oxygen coming in through the pores is enough. So it's okay to allow the breathing to stop. This is the way the mind gets into stronger and stronger concentration. And from there you can move it even to more subtle levels of concentration. And the breath energy is still. Your sense of the definition of the body, the surface of the body, begins to dissolve. It's like you're sitting here with a cloud of little dots of feeling. And you have the option of focusing on the space between the dots. And realize that that space has no end. There's no boundary around it. You hold that perception in mind. That creates an even more subtle level of concentration. So on through the different levels of absorption. It's a matter of feeling, perception. Fabrications of different kinds fall silent. As your directed thought and evaluation drop away, as the motion of the breathing drops away, it's in this way that the different aggregates separate out. You isolate them as you get the mind into concentration, in the same way that someone who has to develop a physical skill has to learn how to isolate different muscles. When you're playing the piano, when you're dancing, you have to be able to isolate the different muscles in your hands, in your arms, in your legs, in your back, your torso in general, so you can move the body precisely the way you want. It's the same way with concentration practice. You have to isolate these different functions of the mind to get the mind to settle down. And once you've isolated them, then you've got the raw material for understanding why they're suffering. Because the Buddha said suffering is clinging to these aggregates. So once you're clear about what perception is and what it can do, what feeling, fabrication, form, to what extent form is fabricated. In fact, one of the most important insights in all of this is to see how all of these different aggregates are fabricated. There's an intentional element in each, even in your experience of the body. You have a hand. You have hands all the time. But you're conscious of them only when you think of using them, when you feel the need to use your hands. Otherwise, the perception of the hands gets blurred. Same with the other parts of the body. So there's an intentional element in your experience of all these things. And you want to see where there's the clinging. And looking at your experience in this way, you're getting yourself out of the narratives, all the particular personal details of your particular sufferings, the details that distract you from actually learning how to put an end to the suffering. And it turns your attention to the details that help you get out. Exactly how is perception contributing to your suffering? How is feeling? How is fabrication? How form, consciousness? What does it mean to cling to these things? The Buddha defines clinging as passion and delight. And it can come in four ways: through sensual obsessions, through views, through habits and practices, and through ideas of what you are or what you aren't, what your identity is. Those are the ways in which we cling, in which we take passion and delight in these aggregates. And so we're moving into some very delicate details here, but it's a different kind of detail. It's the detail that's not so personal in the sense of your particular narrative of your sufferings. It pulls you out. And by seeing what all forms of suffering have in common, you open the possibility of freeing yourself. So wherever you find yourself caught up on the details of why you're suffering or why you're feeling that nobody loves you, nobody cares for you, nobody's really helping you with your sufferings, or why you're oppressed by a particular aspect of your life, remember, everybody's suffering in one way or another. And obsessing on those particular details is not going to get you out. It's by turning around and looking at what's universal, the universal details. That's what opens the possibility to freedom. To learn to acquaint yourself with these aggregates in action as you get the mind to settle down. because they provide the key for understanding how you can do more than just settle down. You can make your escape.